Can art and commerce coexist peacefully? That's what we're talking about today on The Sick Picnic. Hey everybody, welcome to The Sick Picnic, where we talk with real artists about building creative careers and the ups and downs of the journey, and we have a lot of fun doing it. I'm your host, Matt Geiler. I'm also your creative spirit guide, and I look like some kind of a cartoon sailor on this episode. Before we dive in, though, please don't forget to hit that subscribe button and sign up for the Sick Picnic newsletter, because every month we send you some inspiration, some recommendations, and some fun stuff to jumpstart your creativity. And now I cannot wait to get into it, because I am very excited to introduce you to this episode's guest and talk to my friend and your favorite, John Cates. John Cates likes humor, moving pictures, and business applications. After leaving the commercial sign industry to pursue a career that combined his business experience with his personal passion of entertainment and comedy, he wound up as a live event and video producer for the B2B arm of the Second City Theater in Chicago. From there, he built a business around his favorite elements of art and commerce, producing humor-based multimedia campaigns that solve a multitude of communications challenges. All of this to say, you're amazing. I can't think of a better person to chop it up with today about the topic. And I just want to thank you so much for being here. Welcome to The Sick Picnic, John Cates.
Well, thank you very much, Matt. And I appreciate you not being able to think of anyone better to talk to than me. And thank you for having me. And obviously, as you read in my bio, I hope it comes through that, you know, my professional goals pretty much are about answering that question every day. Do art and commerce coexist peacefully?
And let's face it, like our business of, you know, at least the comedy and improvisation world part of it is rampant with wildly talented and funny people who don't necessarily like maybe know how to channel it into a productive end thing.
Well, I would say, you know, one thing I think I've been most successful at career-wise is doing what, you know, everybody thinks is the ultimate goal, which is take something that you enjoy or taking a passion and combining it with what you do to make a living. And at the time we met doing improv, I was also working full-time in the architectural sign business. And it was a very corporate environment where I was managing large accounts for, you know, Fortune 500 companies. So without realizing it, I was probably bringing a lot of what I knew in the business world into the creativity, which at the time was a hobby. And the time that I spent doing that, I was able to kind of parlay that into a producer's city, where I was able to combine all of those skill sets pretty effectively. And I've been doing so ever since.
Yes. Yes, John.
Yeah. So the quick answer to your question is yes, they can coexist peacefully if expectations are set and followed by both parties. And so I think we can just end the show there. I think we've answered it and
end of show.
Get on with our lives.
So when it comes to picking projects, how are you able to tell like what will sell and what won't? And can you give an example of something that's more on the saleable side than the, how does that work for you?
You know, I come from the creative services angle with a bit of humor. I think that's just sort of our niche. And I think it's a, you know, it's engaging. It takes a lot of, you know, otherwise dry content and makes it more palatable. And that can work for external audiences as well as internal audiences. I find that the real art in all of it is to be able to identify and also, you know, coach a potential buyer or client in what is this intended to do? You know, the execution of it can be all kinds of different things. The content can go in a lot of different directions and answer a lot of questions and address a lot of, you know, audience demographics and that sort of thing. But do you really have a handle on why you're doing it, so that we as a creative team can bring the right creative to it and we don't end up creating things that just sort of languish on a YouTube channel somewhere where nobody sees them, but actually have a strategy behind them. So how do I know which projects to pick? A lot of times, you know, there's a bit of a getting to know you process or a, you know, exploration with a client that tells you whether they're really a right fit, you know, and especially if you're coming at it from a sense of humor, you know, how seriously does this company take itself? You know, how willing is this culture to be self-aware and, you know, maybe, you know, poke fun at itself or at least just have fun with the messaging in a way that is authentic or not? Because sometimes, you know, very conservative brands just may not want to push the envelope too far, even if they think it's a good idea. And it's best to sort of figure that out early on before you get too far down a path and realize that you don't want that.
So do you believe that there is an inherent conflict between artistic expression and commercial success?
I was told when I got into the creative business that you should never make your paid work your passion, or at least know how to separate the two. So meaning it's important to maintain your creative expression and your personal voice and the integrity behind all that. It's also important to know that whenever you're looking for another entity to provide financing for it, and that can be a corporate client that you're doing business for, that could be a television network, that can be a theater. You know, when someone else's money is involved, you have to give them a say. So that's an expectation you have to learn to set with yourself to know, you know, where you fit within that game. And you have to give up a little bit of control anytime that you're looking to introduce commerce into your art form.
That's a great insight, because that's something that I'm speaking personally, it took me a while to learn not just that's the truth, but also, you know, because when I was super young and started doing like freelance work, you know, I'd get hung up about like, oh, well, if you like my illustration style, then, you know, why do you have 8 million notes about, you know, the color of this character's shirt or whatever, you know? And client facing, but inside I'd get really bristly about, you know, what's wrong with this? You know, you hired me for me, you know, that whole thing. We've had a lot of conversations about your comedy work, producing comedy and producing humorous content for corporate clients, some of which, as you mentioned already, are very conservative. Some of which are like, yeah, I'm freewheeling, let's do whatever. And some of which are like, I'm very concerned about this getting out of hand. What's that communication been like for you?
The conflict is necessary, quite frankly. I think that if, you know, to bring two philosophies together for whatever the purpose is, you know, I personally enjoy seeing something being used productively. So even if I'm, you know, writing a video that I'm trying to make funny, the fact that someone uses it to improve their business is also interesting to me. And I think part of what I like about the business of corporate comedy, if we want to call it that, or corporate creativity, is that, you know, you get to learn from people that do something you don't understand, and you get to teach them as well. So I think the two different sides are necessary to make it work. The skill is really in both sides being able to empathize with the other. And so even if you get notes that feel like, well, I thought you said you wanted this to be funny and you just cut that joke. Well, yeah, I mean, because you don't understand, it might be funny to you, but it also could touch on some issues that this company or this client can't do.
I've always loved working with you because, you know, you do things naturally, like, you know, this company has shareholders, whereas, you know, I don't even know how companies work. I'm almost 50. I have no, I don't have a,
well, and again, I think, you know, going back to my career trajectory, having spent so much time in the corporate world and having been on that side of it to see where those conversations take place and you know, what the goals are, I don't you still have to keep that in the back of your mind and just not be personally put off by someone. You know, the thing is, if we're being honest, you know, especially if we're talking to like other creatives and we know them. I mean, I work with a team of people all the time, and I bring creative writers and directors and actors from my network in to do the work that I'm doing. And the whole goal is kind of like, I want you to not restrain yourself, you know, use your creativity to its fullest potential, and then let me restrain you, you know. So,
how do you think the relationship between art and commerce is evolving after, you know, going through that topic of that dance? Because it seems to me that it is evolving to where those lines are blurring a little bit.
So, yeah, I mean, one way it's evolving is the clients are becoming more knowledgeable about what's done on the creative side, particularly on the technical side, because that's what's changing, you know, and it's talked about every day. Like the way we're producing things technically is becoming so much more accessible that it's not so foreign to the buyer anymore. You know, if you're talking to a company that is a food packaging company or something, generally the people you're talking to are far more knowledgeable about how social media and digital media works than they were 10 years ago. And that's a good thing. It's gotten more streamlined. It's gotten more accessible, as I said. And that, to me, allows for the creativity of it and the idea of it to be more important. So we can almost treat the execution as secondary, whether, oh, this is going to be a video, this is going to be a social media campaign, you know, this is going to be audio or whatever, right? So this goes back to, I don't know, more than 10 years ago now, where I lived through a time when everybody wanted a viral video, right? This is, oh, yeah. You know, and that's all they knew was that I've heard, you know, once you learned that, oh, putting videos on the internet is free, essentially, because you don't need a media buy like you do for television. Well, we like that, you know, or I have a nephew who just graduated from film school who could essentially edit Star Wars on his phone in that, you know, so obviously these things don't cost anything anymore. So, but what does cost, whether time or effort, is the getting the messaging right so that the free thing you make or the less expensive technical approach has any value at all. And I know we're just dipping our toe into AI, and that's going to be a whole other time. There's a whole other series of questions that are coming around that where we're going to have to say, well, here's what it can do and here's what it can't do. You know, but there's things you have to sort of admit about AI, and this is probably going to be a controversial statement. So there's a client that I work with that essentially is in the financial space, we'll say, to not mention any names. And that's not my area of expertise. What I've done for them is help them create content for website and marketing materials that takes their very specific information and makes it palatable to a general broad audience who doesn't understand what they do all that much more than I do. There are times when you look at something like ChatGPT and say, okay, this can start to write something for me and get pretty close to what it needs to be with a few, you know, flourishes from myself. And you ask yourself, like, is this cheating? Is this cutting corners? Is this letting something else do the work? And one way to look at that is, you know, if you're writing about something that you yourself are not an expert in, you are essentially aggregating a lot of information, whether it's through research or, you know, interviews or getting the information from the client. The job as a creative communicator in this space is to take other people's information and you know, assemble it into something that's watchable, enjoyable, understandable, engaging, all that good stuff. And in that case, the AI is just kind of a faster way to do that. It's just a hyper Google in a sense. So you can still feel like I'm directing this in a way that is solving the client's need, but I don't have to pretend that I otherwise would have gone and gotten a degree in finance just so I could write this video.
Now, for artists trying to make their creative career their full-time gig, what kind of advice do you give to someone who's in that position trying to figure that out?
So I would say, you know that there's a lot of people out there who do what you do, or at least say they do what you do. Figure out what your expertise is. What is your level of creativity, and where does it fit the most? And then start to look at yourself. You know, we live in a different world now where, you know, the gig economy is growing. It's becoming more acceptable. It's, you know, bigger companies are far more comfortable hiring individuals that don't necessarily work for a bigger company, and they see the value in that. So what that means is, as an individual, a freelancer, a solopreneur, whatever you want to call yourself, you need to add a skill set to your toolbox of being able to market yourself, being able to treat yourself like a business. You know, it's one thing to love what you do. You also kind of have to know how to sell what you do. And that can take up more time than you realize. But it's what will, you know, elevate your presence and brand above everybody who's on Fiverr or, you know, one of those sites where you can go find somebody to do a task for you. So that can mean networking with people outside of your area of expertise. You know, learn what, you know, if you know what kind of clients or what kind of customers you want to work for, where you want to sell your creativity to, get to know some of those people, have the conversations, and really understand like what their concerns are, because, you know, you already know you can bring the creativity, you can create something for them, but can you do something that's going to solve their problem? And it seems easy, but it's also easy to forget, because when you're being creative, you know, you want to focus on doing things without limits. You want to open your mind to whatever's possible. That's where good creativity comes from. But then you also, again, to bring it into the world of commerce, you have to then learn to focus that into the world of the people who will ultimately use that for their livelihood. And it's not an impossible task. The biggest advice I would say is keep a separate personal creative outlet so you don't have to mix the two. You know, write things for yourself that you don't necessarily care if you make money on right away, that nobody else has any say in, so that you don't feel like everything you're doing that someone else will ultimately own has to contain everything that you wanted it to be. It's not yours anymore. Keep the things that are yours, and then separate those from the things that you want to do to make a living so that you can maintain that sanity. And again, it takes some time to learn to take creative notes from people who aren't necessarily creative. But when you learn to accept that and know that that's how you enter into that world of commerce, you graduate from being just a creative to a creative business person. When you learn to speak that language, that in itself becomes very rewarding, I think. And again, I've always looked at creativity as a, you know, something as problem solving in a lot of ways. And when you see it that way, and when somebody comes to you with, I need to sell this product to these people, I need to appeal to this demographic, I need to work within these parameters of my company culture and communicate to people on a global scale of, you know, code of conduct within our company or things like that, and be able to say like, yeah, I can do that, and also make it more interesting than just, you know, reading a pamphlet, and take pride in being able to solve that problem, even if it's not the kind of subject matter that you would wake up in the middle of the night and go, oh, I got to write a story about.
No, I love the problem solving in framing it that way.
Yeah. And when you look at it that way too, it's, you know, it's not as personal, you know, it's easier to be collaborative. Creative agencies can be sort of off-putting, you know, in the way that they, you know, feel superior in their ideas to the clients, and they don't want to do that. They don't want to feel dumb for giving you a note, you know.
Isn't it a mind blower how easy, like how far being easy to work with will get you?
Yeah, it is. I mean, well, it's amazing somehow how long it takes some of us to learn that. It's just like, just be, you know, just say yes once in a while. See how that goes.
So now that we've explored your insights, John, for building a viable creative career, it's time to spread the old pin blanket out just a little bit and dive into the nitty-gritty of your creative process. So I have a few questions for you about how you work creatively. The first of which is, can you share a specific ritual or moment of inspiration that sparks your creativity? Like when you sit down to write or something, when you're beginning, like what's the inciting incident as you click into the process, if you've got one?
I mean, it's pretty loose, but there's a couple of patterns that I've noticed. So I, like most creative people, have a lot of notebooks laying around. You know, I like to buy one like every 6 weeks and then, you know, fill it about a third of the way through and then buy another one. I try to approach everything as having, if not a voice, at least a specific message. You know, I write corporate entertainment. I write stories. I write music. I like to write lyrics, and I'm a musician. And that's, you know, writing music is a really good way to kind of look at the creative process in a very condensed way because of its, you know, how it's delivered. And I find that in the most successful instances, in any of those cases, is understanding like what you're trying to say, which seems obvious, but it isn't always. You know, sometimes you come up with a good idea for a line or a character that just doesn't go anywhere because you've never figured out why they exist. So I have notebooks where I just like to write down funny sayings or little details of things like character names or just a short synopsis of a scene that I don't think are enough to build in something useful, but they're nice little reference points for that day when I go, you know what I really want to talk about? I really want to write a song about that time. What I learned from the time I stole that car in Indiana as a 15-year-old. I'm sorry, that I borrowed that car from a neighbor. and exploring like what was going on in my head as a young person living in a small town, and then being able to, you know, almost outline what's the purpose of it. You know, not just telling the story of what happened, but like what would drive a person to break a law at that. I don't know why I'm going into this. This is a very terrible story to be telling out loud, but
you're gonna get yourself arrested if you keep
going. I think the statute of limitations is probably run out on that. But you know, I've read some good books about creativity. I recently just read a songwriting book by Jeff Tweedy of Wilco, which is really good and kind of really talks about how whatever you're saying for a reason, even if it doesn't make sense to you at the time. Like things, sometimes seemingly random ideas fit together in ways that you didn't see that. And it's not random. It's because they're coming from, you know, a place within your life experience that maybe you didn't know. So to try to answer your question, I start very high level. I don't, you know, I think there's lots of things scattered around in terms of wordplay or dialogue or interesting details that I can decorate my cake with later when I decide what the flavor is. And when I, you know, what's the saying, like bed, bath, and bus, you know, when you're driving in a car, when you're in the shower, or when you're laying in bed, when your mind is, you know, kind of unoccupied with other things, or when you're doing some menial task and you were hit with that divine inspiration of like, oh, here's a point of view. And that's the word I should have started with. Start with a point of view. You know, I think if you really want to talk about what I think that some of the lesser good creative enterprises that are out there, I think there's a lot that passes for entertainment and specifically comedy that never bothered to put a point of view behind it. And that, I think, falls short for me and probably doesn't succeed the way it was intended. If you feel like you understand what you're trying to say and why you're trying to say it, then the rest of it kind of falls into place. And that's absolutely true with any kind of, you know, corporate or business creativity as well.
You mentioned notebooks, and you know I'm a huge notebook.
I know. You've inspired me in that
junkie
way.
Are there other creative resources that are your go-tos that it's like, I can't live without this. That's part of your process.
You know, voice recorder for sure. you know, something floats through your head that sounds good, and you know that there's no way you're going to replicate it unless it's, you know, you hear it again out loud. I think, you know, I guess it's any way of recording an idea, whether it's on paper or on recording audio, so that you can remember it at a time when you need to use it.
I want to ask you about this, since you brought up the voice recording thing, and since we're both musicians, do you think that some of the reticence around it, or like, even when you have, you know, you have like a recording studio in your phone, you can capture an idea as it comes by just voice memoing it. Do you think sometimes there's still a holdup, because even if you're all by yourself, sometimes I have the idea of like, oh, I need to sing this into the phone so I don't forget it, so I can remember to record a fuller version later. But it's also, am I being too weird? Is this a weird behavior? And so then you, even if you're by yourself, do you think that's also sometimes that gets in the way of like, wait a second, I'm standing in the middle of my living room recording a wordless vocal for a song that doesn't exist yet.
I'm sorry. Who are you, and what have you done with Matt Gaylor? Because the Matt Gaylor I know has never in his life worried about looking weird.
Okay, but what I'm saying is like, true, but sometimes I have the thought. And so because I have the thought, usually I go through with it, obviously, but I also have the thought sometimes like, oh, it's, you know, it takes a while to get comfortable sometimes with valuing your creative miscellany that much to say, I've got to hold on to this, because at some point that's a practice that you have to develop,
right?
To say, no, I need to write the thought down, or I need to record the snippet because I'll need it later on.
Yeah. I mean, I think you bring up something about feedback as well. That is, you know, you talk about like, how will it be perceived? You know, if I'm walking around my house singing something into my phone, and I am very self-conscious about that. I will go out in my garage and, you know, sit in the car by myself, not running usually. And it just, because, you know, for someone to overhear my creative process is almost, you know, can be mortifying. But the idea of, you know, being not afraid, and not only not afraid, but like, know the importance of getting feedback, whether you want it or not, is so valuable that, you know, you got to find people, and you and I have a good relationship this way. You know, people that you can trust to give you honest feedback on the stuff that you're doing, so that you really know. Because again, even if something feels great in your head, if it's not resonating with other people, then it's probably not going to be the thing you want it to be.
Mm. What's a piece of advice that you would give to your younger self, creatively speaking? like not don't steal cars.
Yeah, no, I'd say steal more cars. That's probably more lucrative than anything I've done creatively. But, I know you and I have had this conversation. The one thing that came to me far too late in life was the understanding of how much talent comes from physical work. The Beatles are a great example, particularly because they're so far, you know, they're so mythological because it was so long ago that they existed. But we look at this band like, how is it that, you know, these four musical geniuses found each other, or, you know, three and a half at least, found each other and formed this band? And like, how serendipitous, and they went to high school together and all that. And then when you really learn about what they're, before we ever heard any songs from them, these guys were playing like 8-hour shows in Hamburg, right? They put in so much time playing together, and John and Paul spent so much time writing together. You don't think about that because, you know, that was during a time, obviously, when, you know, we didn't have so much access to people as we do now to understand like how much work was put into what they learned how to do before they ever recorded their first song. And were they geniuses? Yeah, in their own way. But I think the real genius was the ability to hunker down and devote that much time, and particularly to be able to do it with the same people for so long without, you know, letting those all, you know, those dynamics get in the way. I just saw, I watched a documentary on the Beastie Boys, which I've always been a fan, but also, again, these are three guys who met as friends. You know, they didn't meet at like the best rappers in New York convention. They were just three guys who wanted to make music together and ended up being like, you know, this really super good group of rappers, right? And when you learn their story, again, it was so much time they spent learning this stuff together that made them who they were. It wasn't, again, some random thing where these three guys just happened to be really good at something. It was a whole lot of like thousands and thousands of hours that they spent learning something together until they got good at it, which is a long way of saying, like, don't we like to look at the end product of things and say, oh, that person is just inspired. That person just was born with this ability to create these things, without realizing that part of that might be true, but probably more likely the gift that they have is their willingness to focus on getting better at it, and not just doing it, but learning it and trying and failing and doing all those things. So to your question, what would I tell myself early on is stop waiting for some sort of inspiration. Stop thinking that, you know, a great story or a great song or a great idea comes to you in a, you know, as inspiration, and just start working towards it. You know, write something and write it 20 times till it's good. I realize this all sounds like obvious advice to creative people give each other. It's just like, yeah, man, don't be afraid to fail. Just, you know, keep at it. But it's, I think it's more true than we even realize that when we say it.
Well, here's something that kind of dovetails with that. I was wondering if you would want to play a simple word association game, maybe the simplest and purest form of a call and response improvisation between two people who love words. You want to play this word game with me?
Yeah, I do.
We'll go for like 30 seconds and see where it takes us. I'll just say a word. You'll say what comes into your mind, and we'll go back and forth.
Okay.
Okay. Ready?
Mm-hmm.
Bread.
Honey.
Sawdust.
Wood shop.
Gravy.
Money.
Partition.
Nudity.
Porcupine.
Lampshade.
Covert.
Operation.
Death knell.
Band name.
I think we got a song going there. I particularly liked your response to partition was nudity.
Yeah, I don't know why. I had a picture of somebody changing clothes behind a partition. You know what improv game I like?
What's that?
You remember something called Ass Tag? Which, if I remember, it's been a while, but if I'm remembering correctly, it was a game of tag, as the name suggests, that was played on the stage. This was a warm-up exercise we would do. And now I believe you tagged with your ass.
That's right. You had to lead with your ass. You had to tag other people with your buttocks. You couldn't use hands or anything else. So it was a bunch of improvisers scuttling back and forth around the stage, trying to touch each other with their posteriors. That was in an air, like, could you do it now? Could an instructor at Second City be like, time for ass tag, everybody?
I think they've phased that one out.
Okay, it's snack time, little babies. This is where we get into the savory creative work that you're doing right now, John. So I want to ask you, are there things that you're working on right now, projects you're excited about that you could share with us?
And there are.
What kind of creative engines are thrumming in your neck of the woods?
So, yeah, there's a lot of thrumming going on. I've been thrumming all morning, and it's proving just as productive as you would expect a good morning thrum session to go. Here's what I'm excited about. So back to what we were saying earlier about things like technology and, you know, the way clients' needs are evolving and staying ahead of that and using, you know, creativity as a way of being flexible in the marketplace. Prior to the pandemic, the lockdown of a couple of years ago, a lot of what I was doing was producing live action video. That just seemed to be mostly what clients were looking for to broadcast the message. It was very popular and useful. When we all stopped leaving our homes for a period of time and certainly stopped gathering in large groups, that went away for a good amount of time. But it was an opportunity to start to build more products and skills in the animation and motion graphics space, which as things kind of came back to life, and even, you know, now with companies that are working with more of a remote workforce and the whole corporate structure has changed in the way that we work, that's actually become, you know, more popular in terms of content that clients want. It's more, it's efficient. It's less, you know, animation is less expensive than it used to be because of the technology that's out there. So a lot of what I'm doing, it's, you know, it's easier to deliver. It requires fewer resources, quite frankly. But with that has come a lot of questions about how to make it more interactive and meaningful. You know, when you talk about selling something with an ROI, a return on investment for the client, the same clients that I was making videos for, you know, 5 years ago are now asking questions of how can I make this not only interactive, but something that I can report on, you know, how can I see how it's being used? How can I use it for something more than just delivering a message, but training and interactive usefulness that way? So I've spent a lot of time in the last, you know, certainly this year and the end of last year, creating animated instructional courses that are interactive around things like ethics and compliance and corporate initiatives and things like that, that have kind of used a lot of what I've learned over the last 5 years technologically and creatively to build those things that are seemingly what everybody's looking for right now. And they're fun to make. It's talk about problem solving and taking things that can be fairly dry or typically uninteresting and making them more engaging is a very useful thing to be putting out there. And it's making up the majority of the work that I'm doing, and I hope it continues.
Where can we find some of that kind of work that you're doing, and what's the best way to connect with you? Where can people plug into that kind of stuff that you're up to?
Well, I have something called a website.
Really?
Yes. Me and my technology team have created, we're just testing it out. We're putting it out there on an internet.
I've heard of those things, but I've never experienced one myself, John.
Right. Well, I mean, they're a pretty sophisticated method of broadcasting information. So you might not be there yet. You'll get there.
That's my usual dimness.
Right. Sure. And I mean, if you get yourself a computing machine, much like the one you're sitting in front of now, and type in an address that is katescollaborative.com, you'll find a good sampling of the work that's being done now. I will admit it's a little bit overdue for a refresh. So a lot of the interactive stuff is not up there yet, but it will be soon. And certainly you can contact me through that site and see some of the work that we're doing.
KatesCollaborative.com is where humans should go to access your creativity.
I mean, humans are probably, it's not just humans, but I think they'll appreciate it more than other species. But, you know, I'm not excluding anybody for sure.
So now that we have peeled back the curtain on the amazing creative journey of our guest and my boy, John Cates, it is time to toss him 10 rapid fire questions, which he has to answer. No overthinking, no second guessing. We're going to throw him into the slapdash hot seat. Okay, John, are you ready for slapdash?
I hope so.
Okay, the questions are going to come fast and furious. Here's the first question I have for you. What is your favorite type of music?
Anything with guitars.
Is your bed made right now?
Yes.
Your first word?
Barometric. Probably, if I know me.
Morning person or night owl?
Neither. I don't like to get up early and I don't stay up late. What's that called?
That's called a middler.
A middler. Yeah, that's me. I get real. About lunchtime, this is when I'm at my peak.
You're a Bette Midler. What food can't you live without?
Popcorn.
Okay.
I eat it every day.
And winter, spring, summer, or fall?
Summer all day long. Summer, summer, summer. Living in Chicago, where we are known to have almost non-existent springs or falls, because otherwise one of those two would be my favorite. But I've learned that these are two seasons you can't count on living in the Midwest. So summer it is. Please proceed. Yeah.
What posters did you have in your room as a kid?
Yeah, I had Van Halen, Jimi Hendrix, and the Scorpions.
Salty or sweet?
Salty.
What is the one place you'd like to see or visit before you die?
Japan.
Okay, great. And last one, easy. If you could have a superpower, what's the superpower?
Time travel.
Me too.
That's the only answer, time travel. You can do anything with that.
Well, John, that was the slapdash. I mean, you're awesome for hanging in there and for enduring that nonstop barrage of questions.
Is it normal to think that I'll probably spend the rest of the day now wishing I had answered some of those differently? Is that the point of it?
Yeah, that's how Jenny designed it, actually.
Okay, good. Just to make you second guess your own opinions about your life.
Yep.
Perfect. Hey, I know nobody wants to hear this, but it's been bothering me since you brought up your producer, your excellent producer and beautiful wife, Jen.
Yeah.
Who's the one musician that you've created a fake animosity towards with her? It was like Al Jarreau or something.
Oh, yeah, it's close. It's Bill Withers.
Bill Withers, that's right. Okay.
We were over at her parents' house. It was for dinner one night, and we were all sitting around watching one of those PBS specials. Something by Bill Withers came on, and Jen's dad goes, "Oh, yeah, I love this song. Who does this song?" And I go, "Bill Withers." But Jen hates Bill Withers' music. She hates Bill Withers.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a complete lie. I mean, Jen has never demonstrated any feeling at all, like one way or the other, about Bill Withers' music. I don't think it's ever come up. It was just a total fabrication. And then her dad was just like, why does she hate Bill Withers so much? I'm like, ask her. And then ever since that day, I've just been like, if I can work it into any kind of conversation that she hates Bill Withers, I will.
And she's had to answer for it ever since. I like that. That's a good bit.
John Cates, I mean, I don't need to say this, but thank you so much for coming on the Sick Picnic.
Well, thank you.
I mean, we're friends, but we love talking with each other, and I love hearing your thoughts on any number of things. But I do think that this will be helpful to people who are you know, trying to blaze their own creative trails, to hear some insight from a dude like you.
I appreciate that. I like talking about it.
As we wrap up today's episode of The Sick Picnic, we want to leave your creative bellies full. So here it is, your Sick Picnic sweet treat. Brainstorm and write down 3 ways to monetize your creative projects or skills. It could be you're selling artwork online, could be freelance work, could be teaching a course, could be trying to get some licensing going for your original compositions, et cetera, et cetera. But be sure to post on the Sick Picnic Facebook page and use hashtag Sick Picnic Sweet Treat. We can't wait to see what you're up to out there. Thank you so much for tuning in. To us, you're not just a listener, you're part of the creative community. And please remember to hit that subscribe button and sign up for the newsletter at www.sickpicnicmedia.com. And hey, if you like the episode or you think it might be helpful to share with someone, please share it out on your socials and leave a 5-star review. That'd help us out a lot. Until next time, make your art, have some fun, and imagine anything. We'll see you next time.